The course is special topics, and the subject is play. This is Shirley Newton, the instructor.
The topics. I want to mention, specifically at this time, that play offers the child two major opportunities. And these are, play offers the child the opportunity to learn by discovery. Play offers the child the opportunity to learn by discovery. And play offers the child the opportunity for cultivating his creative abilities. And play offers the child the opportunity for cultivating his creative abilities. I believe that these are the two major categories of what play has to offer to the child. Naturally, we realize that play is linked to child development. The child learns in play what really no one can teach him. Play is his opportunity to explore, to find out for himself, to direct his own learning. Each child has his own style when he's playing. Have you ever noticed that? Each child has his own style when he's playing. He does his own thing. Play is his own individual way of learning. Play is his own individual way of learning and entering into a cognitive knowing relation with the world and people. And I'll repeat that. Each child has his own style when he plays. He plays in his own individual way. And this becomes a means of learning and entering into a cognitive knowing relation with the world and people. Is play sometimes spontaneous? I think it is. Each child spontaneously learns what is relevant and meaningful to him through spontaneous play. Each child learns spontaneously what is relevant and meaningful to him. Now, an interesting insight into play is this. By the way he plays, a child reveals his maturation or any block in his development. So when a child plays, you can see whether or not he is maturing or whether or not he has any mental blocks or physical blocks or emotional blocks in his development. These soon show up in his play. Play is wonderful therapy. Everybody needs to play. Play is children's business, but it is recreation to the adult. Through play, the child learns how to get along with people. Through play, he learns the concepts of nature in our world. Through play, he can express himself. Those are three areas that are important to realize about children and their playing. Now, play is related to thinking. All over the world, children play. They play hopscotch. They play dolls. They play peekaboo. They play hoops and balls, marbles, hiding, chasing. Some of these are preschool ways of playing, and some of them are more for elementary education. And children do a lot of things when they're together. They pretend to be heroes and queens. All of this is children's play. By making believe, they take on roles of people that they have known, and it helps them to develop and to realize what the world is all about. And it helps them also to cope with reality many, many times. Now, there are specific types or things or ways that children play at different age levels. And I thought this would be interesting for us to be sure and pinpoint from your textbook, one of your textbooks, Play is Children's Business. I imagine you've read this. But be sure to take note of how infants play. Now, what have you ever seen an infant do in an attempt to play? Say, from 0 to 18 months, they get acquainted with their own bodies because that's the closest thing to them, their own bodies, others' bodies, and concrete objects. They watch as things hang over the crib or as things come close to within their reach, and they grab things that they can grab, developing coordination. And they especially enjoy peekaboo because they soon learn that objects that disappear can reappear. And the excitement is in the risk, and so it's played over and over, and partly for the pleasure of the recurring return, partly to participate in the quest for certainty and to make sure it's going to happen. Can you think of some other things that little ones like to play? I know that, little ones really do enjoy being tickled or and touched and this kind of thing. And I've seen a lot of little ones get a real lift over daddy's head and enjoy that very much. They enjoy being amused and entertained. But then when it comes to toddlerhood, they begin to do other things because their mobility is enlarged and their world gets bigger. So they begin to explore. And their exploration takes them into mother's kitchen and into the bottom drawers where all the pots and the pans are. They make collections of keys and cookies and all kinds of little things that come within reach. They love everything you give them, a teddy bear, a hairbrush, just everything. They love to drive the car, make engine noises, and all this sort of thing. They're just beginning to put symbols to what they're doing. In other words, to give words to what they're doing. Then in the preschool years, from 3 to 6, there are rich forms of play that children engage in. They enjoy using and mastering a wide variety of materials. For example, like clay, like blocks, and all sorts of things, that like a ball. Children enjoy a ball, especially when they learn how to throw it and catch it and so on. They enjoy preformed games and puzzles that have a set structure. And there are many, many things that they enjoy. Now, something occurred to me while I was reading today, and I don't know which particular text I was reading it in, but this thought never occurred to me before on the matter of educational toys. Should a child who is 3 to 4, say for example, be given a toy that is primarily educational and has no fun attached to it at all? Did you ever think about that? In other words, are we trying to push academics into children by giving them educational toys? If the educational toy is fun to work with and to master, that's okay. But should we give a child a toy that's just for his intellectual benefit? No, I don't think so. There should be a balance. But we should be very careful. We should be discriminating about toys. A child should be able to enjoy handling something and playing with it. It should have some fun attached to it somewhere. This idea never occurred to me before. You know, Child Guidance puts out a lot of toys, and different ones. Mattel puts out toys and so on. And they're always classified and categorized as educational toys. And really, a child who is a preschooler should not be pressured into deriving education from a toy as the prime objective. I never thought of it that way before, but I agree with that. I don't know if you do or not. Whether you do or not is up to you. But I just think that that is a valid point in disfavor of educational toys. Okay. I think that we've covered most of that. That'll be enough about that. I was going to talk tonight also about indoor play as opposed to outdoor play. I think this is important. Okay, what are some of the games that children can play indoors? That's right. Can you think of some of them that can be played in a fairly spacious area? Please. Examples. Mother May I, Simon Says, Duck Duck Goose. I don't know that one. Drop the Hanky. Farmer in the Dell. In and Out the Window, and a lot of those as well can be played outdoors. But what is the advantage to indoor play for preschoolers? Well, when the weather is inclement, sometimes you have no choice but to keep them inside and provide opportunities for play for them. But indoor play can be good because it can be free and organized as well. And I think it's good for children to learn how to play indoors as well as out of doors. But that doesn't mean that indoor play is going to be a substitute for outdoor play. Tonight I like to focus on outdoor play, and I'm going to set up the overhead projector at this time to illustrate some of the objectives that you should have in mind when you take children to the out of doors. What are some of the factors that you should consider when picking out toys for your child? Would safety be a factor? Would price be a factor? Would durability be a factor? Would design be a factor? Can you think of any other factors that would be pertinent to your choosing a toy for your child besides these that we have just mentioned? I said design, but not materials. Materials is important too. What kind of materials would you look for? That's right. No. It would have to be considered for its durability, like we said, and its toughness. Yes. Yes, not only that, but you need to consider where you're going to store the toy. You don't want to buy something you have to put on his bed so he can't sleep. You know. And you'd want to have something that he could take care of himself. Yes, I see a hand. The age of the child is a factor. Well, then there is the sanitary factor, too. That's close to safety, isn't it? And the child's interest should be taken into consideration. So we have several factors here. All of them are important. The child's age, interest, safety, health, price, durability, interest, what'd you say? Size, storage. That gives us a pretty good idea. Okay. Now, should you be discriminatory about buying toys for your child? Definitely. In other words, you shouldn't just buy toys to be piling up toys in his toy chest. Because a child who has a lot of toys very often doesn't play with them. A child who has just enough toys to play with will more often play with them. So it might be a good idea for you as a parent or as a teacher to remember that it's nice to rotate the playthings that the child plays with so that he may get to work with all of them. You can get it down to a system so that you keep a carton to hold each group of playthings with a list of contents attached, which he hasn't played with for a while. This is interesting, too. Especially when they're young. That's right. They have a very short memory span, and it'll be almost like a new toy. That's why it's important to buy a child for Christmas not too many toys. Because I've seen toys, a child will get a toy, look at it, and put it in the box. And only those things that are out for a while to hold his interest will he play with. And it's good, too, not to have a whole lot of toys just hanging around in a playpen or something else. This makes a child very confused and disinterested. It's better to remove the toys out of the sight of the child and cover them and then bring them out when you think the child might be interested in playing with them, so that he will get the full benefit of them. Really, when you come right down to it, can you imagine the money in this country that is spent on toys, which is wasteful? Millions of dollars just to buy a toy. No, I got to buy him a toy for Christmas. Any old toy will do, but I got to buy him a toy. He's got to get a present from me. You know, I mean, the motivation for buying toys often is anything but proper for the child. And so, therefore, the children don't get to enjoy a lot of the toys that are bought for them either. And what about the child who doesn't know, who has so many toys and gets to destroying one after the other? Do you think that the child should be taught not to destroy his playthings? Well, some toys will take smashing and other toys will be smashed. That'll be the end of it. Well, what do you think about a child who habitually takes things apart? Get him toys that are supposed to go to fit together and that he can dissemble. That's the word. That's right. Not so little that they can be found, and once they're gone, they're gone. That's bad. Yes, things that small children play with should be considerably of good size, because otherwise you won't find them, and otherwise they might find a place in his gullet.
Imagine they would.
I would imagine they'd be kind of fun to put together, too, although I know how heavy they are to carry. Okay. Do you think that every child should be taught to play with one toy at a time and to put it away before he gets another one? What happens when there are a lot of toys indiscriminately put away in a place? Or they get broken? It's better to have shelves. Yeah. Yes, that's right. And the child gets a sense of order to playing with toys. He appreciates that more. Because I don't think there's anything that's more frustrating than a child looking for a particular toy he wants in a great big toy box full of junk. You know, where he has to dig in through it and everything. It's so frustrating. So annoying. Yeah, he's dumping it out. Then he's put it all back again just to get one thing. That's not too great. It's recommended that parents just add one new plaything from time to time. You know, when a birthday comes up or something, to add one new toy. Not to shower the child with many, many toys, but to add one new toy so that the child will gain an appreciation of his playthings and be interested enough to play with them. Okay, what does play mean to a child? Think of some of the things that we've said about play. What could play mean to a child? Right. He adds to his knowledge about the world through play. And then he is constantly exploring the world about him. So play becomes his education. Helps him to practice new skills, helps him to solve problems. And play, I want you to remember this quote, play is nature's means of individual education. I think I said that once or twice before, but I repeat it with a special emphasis here. Play is nature's means of individual education.
Unfortunately, many adults, after they have grown up, have lost the capacity for play. And they seek passive entertainment or distractions to provide temporary and inadequate relief from tensions and worries. Some of the things that they do are like watching television or spectator sports. A lot of things that they do just to relax, they claim. But I maintain that everybody at some time during the week, especially people who work a 40-hour week, should take time off once or twice a week to actively engage in play. Especially now I'm referring to teenagers and adults, because I think it's important. Everybody should have some opportunity for play. Okay, now what is play for adults? Exercise is play for adults. Sports, many different kinds of sports provide play for adults, like actively engaging in volleyball, swimming, karate, judo, basketball, etc. And then there are some people who are not so sports-oriented who just want to have a hobby. And that is another form of play, a hobby. What are some of the kinds of hobbies that you know that adults cultivate? Well, you need to do something for recreation. Some people let a hobby take the place of recreation or exercise. I maintain that probably you should have one of both. I maintain that you need some physical exercise. I really feel that you do. It's not good for your body if you don't. You know why a lot of people have arthritis today? It's because they don't actively engage in exercise. And they've long since lost their capacity for mobility. And their joints get stiffened up and so on. And doctors will tell you that this is definitely so. Now, if you don't have a hobby, maybe you can find an interesting hobby. A hobby is not necessarily a way of exercise. A hobby might be something like crewel embroidery, which I'm now engaged in, or needlepoint, or painting, drawing, taking pictures, collecting records, just lots of hobbies. Hobby is an interesting thing to have, but hobbies are not always a true form of recreation. Hobbies are play, that's true, but I think that a person ought to be able to engage in things for the body's sake. Yes. I would think that in a way they're passive, and in another way they're active. As far as the doing of it, the working out of it, that is active. But as far as giving any real opportunity for body movement and so on, it's not so much more than TV. Some hobbies are very docile, like, you know, sewing something or knitting something. They don't require you to move about or anything like this. They're just as dormant and quiet as watching TV or some spectator sport. A lot of people are spectators and not activists. It's important that people be activists.
Could you be watching TV instead of a hobby?
Well, a recreational hobby. Yeah. How many of you engage in an active sport? Like swimming or playing volleyball or something like this. What is your recreational opportunity? Volleyball. Okay, we'll talk about that later. Okay, what do you do for recreation and play, Terry?
Swimming.
You like swimming more than some other things.
Yeah. You get opportunities to swim.
Okay, what about you, Gaming? What do you do? Do you walk? Walking is a very good exercise. It's also kind of playful, I think. You can have a real good time to go for a walk if you go to a place where it's recreational. Okay, how about you, Naomi?
Swimming.
I like swimming and exercise myself. How about you, Greg?
Depends on the time of the year.
Depends on the time of the year.
Summer's baseball, winter's football.
And you engage in these yourself, or you are the spectator sport? You engage in them.
I will clarify that. Mainly, the one that I engage in is baseball. But I do get into the others. Winters kind of sit around home, stay with fire, it's tight. And, you know, it's nice and warm.
Unless you belong to the spa, something where you can go. And, you know, a few of us belong to the spa, and we can go there and enjoy that kind of recreation.
Yeah. I think when you have a child that is very interested in at home, Jeff will just, Mommy, I'm going to do exercise. And he'll lay down on the floor and he'll start doing jumping jacks and stuff like that. He's very, very interested in exercise, running outside, doing whatever, and you have to keep on with that. Very difficult.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Good for you and good for him. But what really grieves me is that some adults get to the point where they're either too lazy, or they're just not motivated, or they don't see the opportunities before them, and they spend their senior years sitting in front of a TV. That's my idea of nothing at all. Now, I like TV as probably as well as the next one, but I don't want to spend my life in front of a TV. That's passive recreation. I think that we ought to all be involved in some kind of playful activity where we can be active, a meaningful activity. I think it's important for everybody. Okay, now here's one more definition of play that I want you to be sure and write down. Play is nature's way of providing individualized education. Okay, play is nature's way of providing individualized education. All right, here's something else on play before we talk about Freud. Play is research. Now, how about that? Do you ever think of play as research? Play is spontaneous, desired research activity. That's a mouthful. Play is spontaneous, desired research activity carried on for its own sake. It's always in the form of experimental inquiry. And it is the business and lifeblood of childhood. Play is the business and lifeblood of childhood. Is it the same for adults? Is it necessary for adults to engage in some form of play in the process of living out a week? What happens when people have no opportunity to play for week upon week upon week? What happens to the individual? That's right. That's right. Play is a healthy exercise. We all need time when we let down our hair and we play. We do something different from the norm. People who do not take time to play are fretters, worriers, psychotics, psychological problems, schizophrenic. We just all need time to play, to do something different. We need time for social life and play as we get older. It's just important to the balance of our personality, just like it is for a child. Of course, for a child, it's even more strategic because it makes up a great deal of his childhood. And that's how he comes to learn to cope with life and its problems, through his play. And so, we as adults need this opportunity. We certainly do. And I feel sorry for people who believe that adults are supposed to work and work and work and never have any opportunity for play, because they become completely frustrated, nervous wrecks, and they don't really enjoy life. Okay, now let's compare work with play. Your text on the subject of play, Play is Children's Business, says that work is a mathematically measurable quantity of effort or power. I'll repeat that. Your text says that work is a mathematically measurable quantity of effort or power. We have a work week. We put in so many hours of work. Mathematically measurable quantity of effort or power. While in contrast to this, play is measured only subjectively by the one who engages in it. Whereas, in contrast to this, play is measured only subjectively as an emotional quality. So the emotions are involved in play. Here's an example. A person can be really under great tension and then decide that, well, today is Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, I have a spa membership. Now I'm going to go to the spa and I'm going to just let go of all my tensions. I'm just going to exercise hard. I'm going to swim hard. I'm going to enjoy the sauna and so on and so forth. And when I come out of there, I feel like a new person. I've had a chance to, in a healthy, positive way, get rid of some of my tensions and frustrations. And it helps. It's an outlet. It's a way of expression. So play is measured only subjectively as an emotional quality by the one who engages in it. When you play, it's measured by you. It's emotional therapy when you come right down to it. There's value to play. Now the play value is the degree to which any activity is desirable, pleasurable, and rewarding. If you want to write that down, I'll repeat it. The value of play is the degree to which any activity is desirable, pleasurable, and rewarding. It doesn't refer to any amount. It's the degree to which any activity is desirable, pleasurable, and rewarding. You like to play volleyball. It's fun. You enjoy it. Maybe you have some skill at it. You're good at it. There's a reason why volleyball is rewarding for you, for example. There's a reason why swimming is rewarding for me. I get to relax. I can float. I can do a stroke or two. And I keep myself up in the water. I enjoy being in the water. I enjoy the feeling of the water on my body. I enjoy getting wet and getting out and getting dry and getting a shower and just having that opportunity for physical activity. It's good for me and I enjoy it. You enjoy riding a bicycle. That's good for you. It's good exercise. You like getting on the bicycle, going down the street, having the wind blow your hair, being exposed to the sun, being able to go somewhere without using the car, just for the physical, recreational benefit that it has to offer. Okay. Einstein, all of you know who he is, I trust. Einstein was a scientist. He said that his work was play. He worked real hard, but he enjoyed every minute of it. Mozart would have agreed with him because he considered his composing of music and playing the piano and so on was fun. Play. It wasn't work. He enjoyed it. So play is creative and artistic. And it flourishes in freedom. Everybody should have a time when they are free to play and do whatever they want to do. This is especially true of young children. Play is creative and artistic, and it flourishes in freedom. Piaget claimed that play is the essential prerequisite to all intellectual activity. And that's a little different. Just a little different insight by Jean Piaget. That play is the essential prerequisite. Prerequisite is what? Should come before, right? To all intellectual activity. In other words, a child plays and he thinks and his thought processes develop through play. His mind develops through play. His thinking develops through play. His cognitive development is enhanced through play. Okay. Now, what did Froebel say about play? He was the one who first initiated this idea that play is related to learning. You remember Froebel, don't you? Friedrich Froebel? He was the father of the kindergarten. Yes. Okay, now, Froebel said that play is the mode through which the child achieves equilibrium or balance. Play is the mode through which the child achieves equilibrium through harmonious development. Achieves equilibrium through harmonious development. He created gardens for children where activity was designed to give pleasure. And then he says, this is a quote from Froebel that you should write down. I think this is what you should remember him by. Play is the highest phase of child development. Now, many, many people have echoed and amened Froebel's statements because they realized that he had terrific insight into play. Play is the highest phase of child development. It is the purest, most spiritual activity of man in the early years. It is the purest, Froebel again, most spiritual activity of man in the early years. He said the most beautiful expression of a child in the early
is to see him at his play. The most beautiful expression of a child in the early years is to see him at play. How many times have you observed a child who is totally absorbed in play? So that you look at the child and you think, well, he's so serious about his play. How many of you have noticed that some children get totally absorbed in their play? You know that the wheels are going around, and you know that they're learning a whole lot and they're enjoying it very much. So play is not trivial in the early childhood years. It is highly serious and of deep significance. It is more than pleasurable to a child. It is instructive and therapeutic. Let's talk for a few minutes about the social aspects of play. When children are playing, they learn how to get along. They learn how to establish their interpersonal relationships. This is some of the most difficult learning, is social learning. But play offers many opportunities for this kind of learning. When children play together, they learn how to get along together. They learn sooner or later how to be considerate of one another, how to share, how to understand one another's feelings. But all of this takes time and adequate opportunity. Space is needed for children to play together. Facilities are needed and play materials. Above all, helping a child to develop social relationships with another child takes understanding. Empathetic adults and older adolescents need to be able to understand what a child is going through. Many times it's necessary to stop children when they're playing and explain what's happening so that they can learn how to appreciate what happens to one another. Situations have to be defined by the adult in charge or in supervisory capacity. And sometimes restrictions have to be aligned. We have to tell children what they can do and what they cannot do, even in the area and opportunity of play. They need help to learn to live with one another. This is what it's all about. Children need time to play, to relax, and to release tensions. And many times, another child's problem comes to the forefront in the area of play. And many times, a child's personality traits come to the surface in the context of play. Sure. Yeah, that could indicate a violent nature. Yeah, that could indicate that there's a real need there for that child to get expression or help with expression for his feelings, to clarify his feelings. A punching bag's are very good in this area. Or you know those things that I think it's, that Play School puts out? Or one of those television programs puts out a little thing that's balloon-like that you knock over and it pops back.
We have a romper room.
Romper room, that's what I want to say. Romper room does that. And those are important for children, too. It's a lot better for a child to take out his aggressions on a romper room toy than it is for him to beat in the head of his friend. So this is important. It's very bad for a child, a young child, to keep in his feelings. It's important for him to be able to express them in a normal, positive, healthy way. But I think there's a time and place, too, for adults to encourage children to express their aggressive feelings and to understand that aggression is not something that you just, well, when somebody says something you don't like, you just don't go and punch him in the nose. There should be lots of opportunity for a child to get rid of his aggressions through the avenue of play. And I think that a lot of children come to the preschool or the daycare center without having had the opportunity to become socially mature. And social maturity is a very important part of play. It's important for a child to learn how to get along with his peers. Some children have never been exposed to playing with other children. Unfortunately, sometimes a child is smothered in the presence of adults and doesn't get to interact with other children. And this is bad. This is not healthy. And so being able to play with other children is important. And I think it's so wonderful when parents are very aware of this and they make lots of opportunities. They have only one child. They make opportunity for that child to play with other children so that he learns how to get along with it. And therefore, he doesn't become a monster. He becomes a sociable, interact with other human beings in a normal fashion. Many preschools or daycare centers have as their principal goal social maturity. One of their principal goals. And this is important. So they should provide lots of organized play for this to develop. Organized play is the best area whereby social maturity can be encouraged. What do I mean by organized play? Organized play is play that is planned by the teacher for the group to enter into. Now, can any of you think of any ideas of examples of organized play? Anything that
games,
yes, games, music, rhythm, body movement, any of this stuff.
Chairs.
Musical chairs, right. What about some of those song games that they play? I think of that one, This Old Man. Music in Motion. Kids learn to interact with one another. Then lots of times there are games where you pair off the children and they do things together. That's good too. It's important. A teacher can spark. It's important for a child to find a friend when he's young. Every child should have at least one friend in play. You know, some children have to learn a lot about play. They're not too good to begin with. Why is that? It's because some of them are very selfish, very domineering, too egocentric because of their immaturity. They have to learn. They have to have the opportunity to learn. And they will learn if they're given the proper direction and guidance. But they do have to have the opportunity to experience group play, organized play. And sometimes free play can be done in group too. Especially if there's a housekeeping corner and two or three get together and they want to play over there. That's kind of neat. But I think that the teacher has to start play and introduce organized play in order for the child to really benefit from it. Because I think that some children are more prone to enjoy free play more than organized play. Now, why might that be? Now, what do you think? Do you think that in every preschool session, every daycare day, that there should be time allotted for organized and free play? I think that every opportunity should be made for a child to enjoy organized play and as well be able to relax and do what he wants to through the avenue of free play. But they should be spread apart a little bit.
I think, my own personal opinion, I feel that the emphasis should be put on organized play, speaking at that age. I mean, if you're speaking of a young, you know, child, I don't know why. Maybe just because if he was out on his own, you know, he was out on his own, it's not like the street, but, you know, free play, it just seems to me that if it was organized and if he was with other kids his own age right there doing the same thing. I guess, yeah.
Now, you're thinking what, particularly of a 3-year-old?
Well, are we speaking of any particular age?
Well, 3 to 5. Yeah.
I just feel that, yeah, I mean, I agree. I think both should be.
Because probably a child has more opportunity at home to engage in free play. See, and there would be no opportunity for organized play at home.
And a day,